Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host today. Gabriel Montoya took the day off, so who I got pitching for me right now is Felipe Leon from the Inner Square Circle, as well as the 2-Minute Round podcast, which premiered, debuted it just last week. Also, I got Lenny the Fight Smith from the Technical Draw, who's got another podcast show that's coming up pretty soon with some interesting guests that he has set up. Hey, welcome to the show, guys. Thanks for coming on and joining me here today on Leaving the Ring.
Thanks for having us, Lenny.
You guys could take a break. You guys could take a break from building the wall. Come on. Come on down over here. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring, man. Well, as we all know, Felipe, you're doing the show from Tijuana, and then we got Lenny. You're doing the show from Los Angeles, and I'm doing the show from Northern California, Modesto. The heat's pretty, which is crazy because I think it was like yesterday, it was raining, and then today it's like 92 degrees, so it's pretty hot down here, man. I don't know how the weather is out there with you guys, but it's pretty warm.
It's pretty warm out here in Tijuana, and just to take note, this is affirmative action at its best. Three Mexicans on the radio, on the podcast, so it doesn't get – this is Donald Trump's nightmare right here.
I know. Donald Trump's nightmare that three Mexicans that can actually talk and hold their own when they are holding up a discussion. Well, at least two out of three, right? That's what we got to say. Two out of three can hold up the discussion and stuff, man. Hey, big news. Lou DiBella has been subpoenaed. And this is something, Lenny, that he mentioned because you asked him on your show, The Technical Draw, which happened about 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago. I'm not really quite sure, but it happened on your debut show. You had him as a guest. He came on and he came on with kind of a bit of an attitude. He was kind of defensive. You didn't even ask your first question. He was already like his hands were up already to box with you. But you did ask him, is he being subpoenaed by the Al Haymon lawsuit? And he had said yes. Did you find anything a little more interesting about now seeing it on black and white on paper?
So, yeah, Lou, like he mentioned, he made it very clear on the Technical Draw, is not a party. He's not being sued in either the Golden Boy or the Top Rank lawsuit. But
right.
when you have third parties that have information that are at least somewhat involved in what's going on in a case or have information or documents that are relevant to the case, in order to get them involved, in order to bring them in to testify or to get information or documents from them, you generally will serve them with a subpoena. It doesn't mean that they did any wrong or did anything wrong necessarily. It just means that they have information. On the show, Lou let me know that he has been subpoenaed. He wasn't a big fan of the question, but it made sense because I thought he probably had information that was relevant to Top Rank or Golden Boy were going to want for their lawsuit. Now, the thing that's been going out, that's been floating around, I think Steve Kim retweeted it earlier today, and a few other people tweeted me yesterday. Top Rank is now trying to compel DiBella Entertainment to produce a bunch of stuff that they didn't produce pursuant to the subpoena. People are kind of making a big deal about it because it's the document being filed against against DiBella, but in reality, it's pretty par for the course in litigation. It's what happens when attorneys can't work it out informally. You'll ask somebody, whether it's a party or whether it's a third party, non-party, outside person, to give you the information, give you the documents. They say they don't want to give you everything you're asking for.
Explain that a little bit more.
A lot of times you can work it out.
Lenny, explain that just a little bit more to a guy that doesn't understand. Like, okay, so it's not a big victory. It's not something that's surprising, right? It's what you're saying. Because Lou DiBella's name is being brought into this, is this a tactical move to what? For what? To draw it out or to get around something? Explain that to me.
So, yeah, I'm going to have to speculate a little bit because I haven't seen all the paperwork. My federal filing stuff is tied to my work account, so I don't want to be downloading documents on my work computer. But generally the way it works is I'll put it in and make an analogy to like a car accident. You get into a car accident on a street. You get rear-ended. You get hurt bad. You try to recover against the guy that hurt you. The guy who caused the accident. There happens to be a Starbucks right in front of where the accident happened that has a video camera that shines on the street or that goes on the street. You subpoena Starbucks to get that camera footage because you want evidence showing
right.
What happened. Starbucks, if you're a good plaintiff's attorney or a good attorney trying to get that information, you want to ask for all that information. You want to get footage for that entire day. So you can kind of look through, make sure there's no problems with this light. You want to get as much information as you can. Starbucks, on the other hand, isn't going to want to give you everything. Even though they didn't do anything wrong, they're still not going to want to give you everything. They'll probably come back and say, hey, I'll give you the footage for like the 2 minutes where the accident happened.
But so
like
who's
that.
Starbucks? Who's Starbucks in this situation, though? But so we can clarify
Lou
this.
Lou DiBella is Starbucks here.
Starbucks. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that. All right. Uh-huh.
Yeah. The car that's getting rear-ended is Top Rank, and the car that's doing the rear-ending is ostensibly Al Heyman and the Heyman entities. So they can't agree. They bring it to the court.
Which he's pretty much has been rear-ending a lot of these promoters and stuff. I mean, with his tactics, I think it's safe to say he's been doing a lot of rear-ending. So go ahead.
I have a question regarding that. I mean, if you get subpoenaed, I mean, is there a way of that you could get out of it for whatever reason?
Yeah, so usually you can object to the subpoena. You can say, no, I have a number of reasons that I can object. They're asking for too much. They're asking for stuff that isn't relevant. They're asking for stuff that's private or protected by trade secrets or that's private corporate information. There's a lot of reasons that you have, valid reasons that you can have for not giving information. Doesn't mean that you automatically have to give it over. And when you do that and you can't make an agreement on what you actually do hand over, that's when it comes to this. The interesting thing, though, is that I just read today, and I haven't seen the documents, but somebody was saying that the same type of motion to compel has been filed and was already granted in another district against Warriors. I'm looking for that right now, and if anybody has it, you can feel free to shoot me a link at the Fight Smith on Twitter, because I could add a little bit more if I look through that document, because that's interesting.
Yeah, or send it to leaveitaring@gmail.com. That we definitely want to look into that. What were you going to say, Felipe?
And Lenny, I know that this would be completely speculative, but do you have any indication from your conversation with Lou DiBella on the technical draw or anything else that you've seen that he may object to him being called into court?
I mean, on the technical draw, he said that he had nothing to hide, that he's fine, he has no problem testifying or doing whatever. But the fact that it got to a motion to compel and that he didn't agree to give over everything that they were asking doesn't necessarily doesn't counter that, because I don't know exactly what Top Rank is asking for, but if they're asking for his own internal documents and his own record keeping and his own corporate structure documents, he's a private company. They could be asking for more than they're really entitled to. So he could be, it's gray. It's very gray. He could be,
what other things could
totally
be
willing to
for?
Comply.
Lenny, what other things could be totally asked for that is not in terms of the line of what is being investigated? I mean, could it be like taxes and 10-year background check on financing spends? I mean, is that something that Lou can say, listen, I'm not going to open my books for this if I'm being looked at for a particular thing? I mean, he would be in the right?
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I can see him be taking that position in the court, agreeing with him to a certain extent. I think they're probably going to force him to give over some things. The types of documents that I think would be relevant to the case are obviously the contracts that he has with PBC, for the PBC cards or for any Al Heyman cards, individual contracts for cards, any term contracts. If he does have a deal, if he does have some sort of exclusivity deal, then obviously that would be it seems like that would be relevant. But again, I don't know what he has. I wouldn't ask him. That's something that his attorney would not probably want him to talk about. So I wouldn't really pry into that. But just speculating, that's the type of thing that they would be able to probably get in court.
Well, there you go. When we find out a little bit more, obviously we're going to report it here on Leaving the Ring or Lenny the Fight Smith at his Twitter account, which is at the Fight Smith. If you didn't have a chance to check out that interview with Lenny and Lou DiBella on the Technical Draw, you got to go back to our archives and definitely take a quick listen to it. A lot of information. As soon as, if you can get past the FUs and the kind of the, I don't even know what you would call it and stuff.
The hostility. It was plain old hostility from Lou DiBella to our friend Lenny the Fight Smith.
Yeah, then you're going to be able to hear the message and stuff. Some people got, you know what's funny is that some people really misinterpret the message. Some people obviously thought that Lou was being the good guy by opening up, but there was really no openness to Lou. It was a lot of, you're attacking me, Lenny, when you have it in Drew's first blood. That was what I got from that interview. But anyways, we're going to move on here on Leaving the Ring. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, obviously, here on the show. Andre Ward is back in the mix. He's obviously out of his hiatus of not stepping in the ring, something that a lot of folks didn't think, guys, that he was going to do. A lot of people thought maybe he might have just kind of rode into the sunset and called it a retirement at such a stage of his career, which would be his prime. But he's got Sergey Kovalev that's lingering over his head. He's got other guys in the lower division by the name of Gennady Golovkin is another guy that's been kind of hovering at him as well, not allowing him to kind of go at rest and say, I am going to retire. So Andre Ward is back in the mix, and Sullivan Barrera is the guy that's going to step up next on March 27th. But here's my question, guys. I'm here in the Valley. I'm from Northern California. I'm from the Bay. But the one thing I've noticed, and this is something that's not new when it comes to an Andre Ward fight, the promotion isn't there. If you go back with the history of Andre Ward, when he signed the Square Ring, which was Roy Jones and Michael Jordan, right when he got out of the Olympics, became a gold medalist, he went on and moved on with those guys. He didn't move on and sign with a bigger promoter. He decided he wanted to do his own way, his own thing. He took that on, and he was getting on smaller venues. Then he left. He went on to Goose and Tudor, and guess what? He still proceeded to do those things until Showtime came up with this brilliant idea, which was the 6-man tournament at 168. That's when he got some recognition. But as soon as that was said and done, he became the king at 168. He became the legitimate guy to clean out 168 division. He decided to move on from them. When he moved on from them, he kind of stayed very stale. And now he decided to sign it with Rockefeller. Guys, he hasn't done much. I mean, is he his worst marketing PR in history for himself? I mean, this is a guy that knows how to sabotage his own career. I don't get it, Felipe. How does a guy that has a gold medal, who's considered pound for pound one of the best in boxing right now, get no recognition, no publicity, no television, and no radio air to promote a fight that most of us would consider a very difficult fight for him to make as a comeback?
And don't forget also, David and Lenny, that the guy is on HBO pretty regularly, not lately because he's obviously training for this fight, but in the past he has been, when he was on that long hiatus, when he was trying to get out of his contract with Goose and Tudor, he was on HBO quite regularly, and that's the biggest platform of the sport. It's hard to pinpoint what happened to Andre Ward. I mean, first of all, his style is not a style that really calls for a big fan following. You know, he's not He's more of a boxer. He's not a fighter. He's not a brawler. You know, he's safety first, his defense first. Although I really liked his performances in the super eight, in the middleweight, in the super middleweight. Was it eight or was it six? The tournament, you know. But to do more with, people have forgotten about Andre Ward to a certain extent because he has only fought one time in years. And although he's on HBO, a fighter is supposed to fight, and that's the way that he stays in front of his crowd. I'm pretty sure Guzin Tudor tried to do what they felt they needed to do to market him in Oakland. I know he's fought at the Oracle plenty of times, and they did perhaps what they needed to do, just like they have done with Terrence Crawford in Omaha and with other African-American fighters in different parts of the country. But for some reason, if I had to pick something, I just think it's because his inactivity that it has made people forget about Andre Ward to a certain extent.
You know, here's the thing that most folks at the time, when he was fighting the Super Six, there was two things. One was people complained that he was fighting in his home turf. The next one, when he fought like Psycho Bika, it was the reason why there wasn't a major draw is because the Warriors were up on their game. This time around, the Warriors are not really mentioned, and this to me is a time to siege the time for Andre Ward. Here's a guy that's from the son of Oakland. He's a gold medalist. He's gonna get back in the one of the biggest fights. If he gets past Barrera, could lead on to one of the biggest fights in terms of prime for prime versus each other, Sergey Kovalev and Andre Ward. But this has got to be Ward's fault. No communication with the media, no communication, no relationship with any of the local media people. You know, there's no local news mentioning this fight. There's no local news wanting to go to his gym and sit there and talk to them. I've had a chance to talk to Ward a couple of times and his trainer, Virgil Hunter, and it's almost like they've always had a chip on the shoulder, not just from the start of 3 years ago, but I'm talking about from the start of the beginning of their career. You have this sense that they're Mr. Know-It-All. We know what we're doing. You guys don't know what you're doing. You don't even know boxing. Let us handle this. I think the proof is in the pudding right now here, Lenny, that these guys may know what they're doing in the ring together. But outside the ring, it's a different ball game, a different ballpark. It means that you have to have a pitcher, a catcher, and a runner. And obviously, all they have right now is the runner.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've seen guys that have gotten past the not-so-fan-friendly style to still become superstars. Floyd Mayweather is the prime example. And you also have guys that have been able to get past time periods of inactivity and still kind of maintain their status. But I think the problem with Ward is there's a good line in Gangs in New York. Bill the Butcher says, "You're neither hot nor cold, so because you're lukewarm, I will spew you out of my mouth." And that's exactly what Andre Ward is. He's lukewarm.
Right.
He's not a good guy. He's not a Triple G. He's not an old school Oscar Golden Boy De La Hoya type of guy all the way. I mean, he's got the whole Son of God thing, your SOG thing, but his personality doesn't fit with that. But he's not a villain. He's not a Floyd Mayweather, Money Mayweather, Adrian Broner type of guy that you just can't wait to see
Lenny,
get knocked out either.
Lenny, he's an extra in a movie. At this moment, if you have to look at anybody, any character that you mentioned right now, he's not a villain. He's not the superhero. He's not the co-actor. He's just an extra. In terms of, you know, a lot of criticism going to Floyd Mayweather, but the one thing that you're absolutely right, he got correct, is he attached himself to somebody to become that villain. He made a character, and it transcended into the sport of boxing where people, it stuck with them and made them remember the name Floyd Mayweather. Andre Ward, among other fighters in the world of box, in the sport of boxing, have not yet figured out. They understand you got to keep the O. They understand that you have to be technically sound, but they haven't understood there's got to be a character that sells to the people to be attracted, to bring on, to sit down and watch them. That's just something Andre Ward hasn't brought yet. I just find it very, very hard.
Here's another thing, David. you know, you can't only just blame the fighter. I mean, I'm a firm believer that the fighter, all he has to do is train and get ready for his fight, and that's what we want these fighters to do. But the promoter, that's their job. Their job is in their name, promote the fight, to get this guy out there, to get him a media workout day, have the media come out. And if you remember the fight between Saúl Canelo Álvarez and Miguel Cotto, another fighter under the Rock Nation banner, Oscar De La Hoya had to put that promotion on his back, and he had to carry that promotion because Jay-Z, who is the owner of Rock Nation, didn't even tweet about the fight card and the promotion. He showed
Agreed.
Up. But one big thing, I don't know if you guys remember this, that guy didn't even tweet about it. He has millions and millions of followers. I mean, that is what social network is all about, is to promote what you're doing, promote his record, promote his wife's record, promote whatever. And here he is, you know, in the biggest fight card that Rock Nation has ever led, because if you guys remember, they were the lead promoter, and he didn't even bother to tweet about it. Now you have, you know, another big fighter in their stable, and he's fighting on the biggest stage of the sport, and they're not willing to put in the legwork to promote this fight. So it doesn't all fall on Andre Ward's shoulders. I'm pretty sure that you put a camera in front of him.
I disagree.
Felipe,
I disagree. Let me tell you this, okay? Because here's the difference between Miguel Cotto and Andre Ward. Miguel Cotto has already a built fan base. He doesn't really need to get himself out there, because just by the mention of him fighting somebody next, it's going to be enough for a lot of fans to go, ooh, I want to watch it. Andre Ward can't rely on his promoters. He doesn't have a friend-family style. His style doesn't bring people to the seats. So he's got to do everything in his power, not just wait for the promoter. He's already been in that situation, going with like I said, Roy Jones and Michael Jordan, from Goose and Tudor now to Rockefeller. Now, lesson is learned. If you see that your promoter's not doing their job, it's your job now to get yourself out there. Where's the Andre Ward interviews of the world right now? Why don't we see Andre Ward's face all over the place? Why
is
he not putting himself out there?
We all know that Andre Ward, his attitude towards the media is that he's above it, that he doesn't need to answer certain questions. And
there's
your
answer.
To be quite honest with you, he's going to get paid regardless. Whether he gives an interview or not, he has a guaranteed purse. So I'm thinking that his thought process is like, hey, if Rock Nation is not going to get, you know, channel the local CBS affiliate or the local NBC affiliate from Oakland to come over to my gym and interview me, I'm not going to go after it. I got a sick purse. I'm going to get paid regardless. I got to get ready for this fight. I think that's the attitude that Andre Ward is taking right now.
And that's a shitty attitude to have, because, you know, at the end of the day, that money's going to fade away. Legacy stays forever. And I think, and I've said this a long time ago, the fact of the matter that fighters are getting paid at this moment is a Band-Aid. As soon as that Band-Aid is peeled off, the reality is going to kick in, because the scar is that you have never been accepted by the fight fans. You've never been accepted into that Hall of Fame moment, never been accepted of being called a great fighter. Some people could question Mickey Ward and Arturo Gatti. These are club fighters that finally made it to the top, but they gave us memorable fights. Jose Luis Castillo, Daniel Corrales, these were guys that had a lot of technical flaws, but they brought us memorable fights. These are the guys that always will stay as the staple of what boxing is all about. The Andre Ward Award of the World, sorry, you guys kind of fade out like a whistle in the wind.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about that, though, is in the sport of boxing, everything can change in one round, in one fight. Let's say Andre Ward gets past Sullivan Barrera and he fights Kovalev in November or whenever and just goes in and dominates, wins hands down, walking away. I mean, my conversation about him changes at that point. Then at that point, I'm like, well, shit, dude, maybe I was just wrong. Maybe who cares about his personality? The guy just keeps winning.
Yeah, that could be a big thing. And it could probably be 10, 15 years from now, even 20 years from now, when the appreciation finally kicks in. Now, listen, I'm not an Andre Ward hater. I've always been an Andre Ward fan.
I think
the way the guy fights.
I think you're somewhat wrong in that direction, David, because think about Marvin Hagler. I mean, we all love Marvin Hagler. We all think that Marvin Hagler is the toughest, greatest guy that ever lived. But if you go back to the Marvin Hagler days, he was a sully guy. He didn't really like to talk to people. He would close himself off to the media and to the people and go into quote unquote jail when he was getting ready for a fight. So
yeah, but Felipe, he fought
now,
though. There's a big difference though, bro. He fought. He didn't wait 2-3 years out to get back into the ring. This was a guy that stayed competitive. For Andre Ward, just to stay competitive, he shuts down. The door's closed, and they really are closed to the media or any fight fans out there, and he's forgotten. He has to rebuild himself every time around, where Marvelous Marvin Hagler didn't have to do that because his fight sold what he was going to do next.
Yeah, and you do have a point, but it goes back to my initial point is that his inactivity has been his biggest heel, I think.
I think that's
the case. Anytime a boxer is inactive, that's going to hurt him. I agree with you. I think
right.
With Ward, it's like a perfect storm. You have his style, which a lot of people don't like. I don't mind. At least he punches. At least he throws punches. At least he doesn't run. And then you have that combined with his inactivity, combined with his personality. It's just the perfect storm of meh.
You know, the sad
part
about
this. Yeah, I agree with Lenny. It's the perfect storm.
The sad part about this, that in the sport of boxing, Andre Ward, if he gets past Barrera, which he's like 6-1 or something like that, right?
Is the odds 6-1?
I believe so.
That's what
Lenny.
That's what I saw before. I could be wrong. I can't. I was looking for it earlier today because I'm going to be in Vegas for that fight, and I like Barrera as a live dog, but I can't find the updated odds.
That's pretty wide. I think that's a little bit of disservice to Sullivan Barrera.
Yeah, exactly. So if Ward wins, obviously it's okay, he won. But if Barrera wins in a great fashion, that's going to be far more memorable because he beat a guy that most folks wanted to see kind of just disappear.
Yeah, I mean, I think at a six to one underdog, I mean, it'd be a pretty big upset. But us knowing boxing.
Lenny, are you there? I don't know what happened. I think Felipe dropped off.
I think we lost him.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting a really bad, like, echo. Is it my phone? Is it his phone or is it my phone? I don't even know. Anyways.
You sound fine to me.
Okay. So, let's see. I believe we got Felipe back on. Felipe, you there?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry about that.
No problem, man. So, yeah, that echo is back. The echo is back from your phone, Felipe.
On my phone?
It's on okay now.
How about now? Okay. So, anyways, let's move on from that. Obviously, you know, you have Andre Ward.
Yeah, Andre Ward is bringing his bad vibes and messing up the phone line. So, let's go to the next subject.
Yeah, let's go with here's another guy we need to talk about. Terrence Crawford was obviously said by HBO they can't afford him, so he has to move on to pay-per-view. I gotta ask you guys this, man. Who does he go for pay-per-view, and how are they gonna pull this off and getting people to buy the pay-per-view to watch Crawford step into the ring? I just kind of find that a very hard sell to happen.
Well, I think they're going to have to match him up with somebody that is going to be somewhat of a draw on pay-per-view. Obviously, they're saying that it's going to be in June, so it's not going to be the winner between Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley because that's going to be too soon. The name that I have heard mentioned was Victor Postol, the guy that beat Lucas Matisse back in October or November. But he just isn't a big enough name to match up with Terrence Crawford and sell tickets. I mean, sell pay-per-view. So, if anything, Top Rank has to put on the greatest undercard that's ever been put on pay-per-view to be able to sell this pay-per-view.
Postel is just it's a tough sell. I mean, I wouldn't pay for that for pay-per-view. If anything, that's an HBO card that really belongs there because he's a big guy. And the one thing that the criticism that's been about Crawford is that he's fought nothing but smaller guys. So I think it'd be one safe to say that this is going to be fighting somebody that's equal in weight and a bit taller, more lanker than him. And it has a good, it has a different style where he's not going to come forward the way Gamboa and Hank Lundy has done. He's going to try to outbox him. But isn't an exciting card for it to be pay-per-view? Lenny, I just can't. I don't see it.
Well, why not?
No,
why not Lucas Matthias?
Well, Lucas is having the eye problem still. So I think he's going to be on the shelf maybe for good from what it sounded like. But I think the only guys...
Read. Don't believe everything you read, Lenny. Don't believe everything you read. That's all I'm saying.
But even Lucas, I think Lucas is a hell of an HBO opponent for him, just like Postol. Postol is a hell of a matchup because – what's that?
I mean, he's still a 140 fighter. I mean, is that what they're going to plan to campaign him at, is that 140? I mean, if they're talking about Manny Pacquiao, do we ever see him step up at 147? Or is this a fight that Manny's going to say, okay, I'm going to meet you at a catch weight on a pay-per-view event? I don't understand what direction they're kind of gearing them up to.
From the sound of it, it sounds like Crawford is eventually moving up to 147, but he's going to take his time at 140. The problem is there's not a lot of live bodies at 140. I mean, you've got Antonio Orozco, you've got Jose Benavidez, who's really not at 140 anymore. I don't think he can make that weight anymore. And you have Postol. I mean, and none of those guys are worthy of a pay-per-view fight. And none of those guys are going to move the needle beyond like a couple hundred thousand buys max, maybe. I mean, are there 200,000 hardcore boxing fans that are going to pay for that for like a Postol Terrence Crawford fight? I doubt it. But I feel like he eventually has to move up, and he's got to make his bones and make his name on a guy like Tim Bradley or Manny Pacquiao to get to that real pay-per-view level. And without that happening, I feel like they're forcing it.
And that's my thought process there, is that the guy that they need to match him up in against is the winner, Timothy Bradley against Manny Pacquiao, because, I mean, obviously he will be the B-side of that equation as far as the pay-per-view draw, but if he wins, then it sets him up and it builds him with that audience. But for it to be in June, and for it to be on pay-per-view and against a Victor Postol, I just don't see it.
I definitely, you know, I mean, I think what's been missing in the sport of boxing is this. If they are going to try to build up this guy Crawford, there's the lack of creativity in terms of building something around this guy. I mean, I remember when we were being introduced to certain fighters that should have really been televised on Solo Boxeo at the time. Top Rank was doing this thing called Mexico versus the Philippines, Mexico versus Puerto Rico, the UK versus the US. That's something that Golden Boy and Top Rank have kind of steered away. And I'm wondering, how do they introduce Crawford to the casual fans? Because obviously, here's the other question into that. Do they venture out of Crawford's hometown and try to hold a pay-per-view event in Las Vegas, which I think would be premature, Felipe? I think that's a premature thing to do just because of the fact that they've never tested the waters outside of that.
Well, they did in his last fight. He ended up fighting at the Madison Square Garden. But I do not agree it's for them to do the fight. If they're going to go and risk pay-per-view and then do it in Vegas, that's even a bigger risk, knowing that this guy could draw very, very heavily in Omaha, Nebraska, his hometown. So if anything, why wouldn't you, you know, hedge your bets there, and if you're going to go pay-per-view and risk it on pay-per-view, then go for a sure thing and do the fight in Omaha, Nebraska. Why even add more risk to it and take it to Vegas?
I think the names are very slim out there for Terrence Crawford. I mean, I wonder exactly what they're planning to do, how they're going to sell it. I got to be honest. I think I'll be on the record right now. if it goes on pay-per-view, if they follow through because of the fact that they said that HBO can't afford Crawford, do you think it's safe to say, guys, this could be one of the lowest pay-per-views for this year or for the past 3 years in boxing, or even more?
Easily. Very easily.
Yeah, I say safe. Wasn't there a pay-per-view out there? I think it was Bernard Hopkins, and it was like a complete – I mean, not counting the Shane Mosley against Ricardo Mayorga rematch, you know, which he claimed sold like 500,000 pay-per-view buys, which we obviously know that they didn't. But not counting that one, I think that was one of the lowest – the least sold or lowest-rated pay-per-views out there is like a Bernard Hopkins one. But this one will probably be up there if they end up doing Terrence Crawford against Victor Postol, and then it'll put a strong enough undercard for it.
Yeah, I think the talk about moving Terrence Crawford to a kind of a forced pay-per-view, it kind of shows some signs of, I mean, that and looking at the HBO boxing schedule for the rest of the year so far, it looks like there's a rift between HBO and Top Rank. HBO's been doing some weird stuff. I mean, there's no fights on HBO's website that are scheduled, that are set, that are top-ranked fights, besides the pay-per-view fight with Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley. Nothing else is scheduled. Everything else is Golden Boy or Gennady Golovkin. And the Jim Lampley's show, I just saw Kathy Duva tweeted, or Main Event tweeted, just did a big feature on Main Event. So I'm sure the Main Event is going to get some more play on HBO going forward too. It looks like, just looking at it from the outside, that there's some issues going on between that HBO Top Rank relationship.
Well, it's no secret that there's no love lost between Peter Nelson and Bob Arum. You know, that's been documented that they don't really see eye to eye on many issues. So, and we've seen that from Bob Arum in the past, that when he doesn't agree with, you know, the executive at the network, just like with Showtime with Steven Espinosa in the past, now it looks like they're trying to, you know, build that bridge again, he doesn't work with them. So that's not a big surprise.
I guess the next question is, where does Bob Arum go now? Because he can't go back to Showtime. I mean, I feel like, well, especially with Showtime's full schedule, they're not going to have any more money to pay out Top Rank for Terrence Crawford's fees.
I think that might be some of the reason why. I think that might be some of the lawsuit there, is because he's limited into where he can go. And going after Al Haymon to try to open up some doors there for networks is the possible way of, because it's restricted him too, Lenny, to even get any of his really talent out there to get them that exposure, to get them that, you know, that this is the guy we should look at next. So,
but he has gone to Showtime, because he's going to be, isn't Vasyl Lomachenko and Nicholas Walters on Showtime?
No, I think that fight is now on the shelf.
I thought they had mentioned it, that it was going to be in on Showtime as part of that, new season, or the new schedule that they're coming up. And also on June 11th, when they're going to have that fight card at the Madison Square Garden with Felix Verdejo, and I forgot what other card. I think it's Nicholas Walters against, no, it's not. I forgot what other fight card is scheduled for June 11th from Madison Square Garden, obviously with Felix Verdejo on the eve of the Puerto Rican parade. That's got to be HBO, I would presume.
Yeah, I'm looking on HBO, HBO's website. I don't think that one's formally announced as an HBO card. Maybe it's an After Dark.
I read that they are working on that fight card from Madison Square Garden with Felix Verdejo on there and a couple other actually pretty good fights for Madison Square Garden on June 11th.
Well, whatever they're doing right now, HBO definitely got to step it up, because for the past 3 months here on HBO, man, we got to admit, the fights haven't, and the only fight that's kind of delivered, or had delivered, did deliver, is Vargas and Ali. And the rest of everything else can be quickly forgotten and not forgiven. Showtime, their schedule, hopefully, because the names sound good, can we say the fights are going to be fantastic? That's something that's yet to be seen. But HBO The names have been put up, but the names haven't been good, so they've been holding up to not be well at all when it's time for fight night.
Yeah, and then on the other side of the street, you got Showtime putting out their schedule for spring and summer, and I'm impressed, man. I'm happy with it.
I'm really impressed. I like the Abner Morris fight. I mean, obviously the Porter and Keith Thurman fight is something that everybody was kind of hoping to happen a little earlier, but for whatever reasons, a car accident supposedly in the airbag stopped that from happening. But Showtime definitely has been stepping up. Luda Bella as well, with his card going on from last week, really good. Something that's worth talking about. Something that was worth mentioning. And everything else that they're putting together is definitely a upside to the Showtime network because, dude, they've been on a serious, serious drought where HBO was there open to take it, and they just definitely dropped the ball with their announcing of fights and their unannouncement of fights for a schedule that's wide open for the summer. There's really nothing there that we can be looking forward to. Unless you're a dedicated Andre Ward fan, that's the only thing right now you could say, well, I'm looking forward to watching.
Yeah, it doesn't bode too well for the first 6 months or a year of Pete Nelson's, reign at HBO. I mean, he hasn't really put any great fights together. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Andre Ward Sullivan Barrera fight was put by Ken, was his name, or the guy that was there before, the guy from Showtime. So now, what's the first fight that actually Pete Nelson has actually put together?
I think he picked up Francisco Vargas, Orlando Salido. I'll give him credit for that. That's something I'm really excited about on HBO.
And that should be a co-promotion, or at least Bob Arum is going to be sitting in the first row because Orlando Salido is promoted by Top Rank.
Right. Hey, really quick, I'm going to go into this because we had a lot of emails here on Leaving the Ring, and one of them obviously is off of Jesse Vargas. A lot of folks are asking and wondering, what are the pimples on his neck? Did he do the VADA testing? Is he working with Memo Heredia? Well, first off, we thought initially he was doing the VADA testing for the fight with Ali, and it didn't happen. So that's already out the door. Is he working with Memo Heredia? There's been no report, and we haven't been told he is or if he isn't. Now, going on with the pimples and all that, look, he's got pimples on his face, pimples on his neck, pimples on his back. Does it say he could be on something? Yes and no. Can't really say that there's something there to be called on. You know, you could make your own speculations, but here on Leaving the Ring, a lot of folks got to remember, whatever we reported on PEDs or broken stories, it's out of facts. It's not out of speculations. We're not a conspiracy radio show. So I appreciate all the emails and all that. Until we get any further information about that, we'll definitely report it on the show. Now, going back with that, because folks have asked us, in email, well, do you think there's corruption? Do you think fights are fixed in the sport of boxing? Well, I'm going to let Felipe Leon tell you a story he just told me the other day that he experienced and witnessed this past weekend attending a fight event. Felipe?
Yes. I don't know if our listeners are very familiar with my background in boxing, but I've been writing about boxing for over 10 years. I started as a correspondent for FightNews.com, and with time, I became an international editor there. And then I also, with my partner Renzo Novara, a Spanish language boxing site called BoxeoTijuana.com. And throughout my career writing about boxing, I've been to hundreds of fight cards, and I've seen a lot of things happen, but I've never seen what I saw this past Friday in Tijuana. Basically, we had a pro-debut fight, a four-rounder between two guys that were pro-debuting. Obviously, one guy was supposed to win. He was a local favorite. He was a fan favorite. He was the fighter that the promoter was protecting. But his opponent didn't get the memo. He came out with guns blazing, and really put it on this kid, knocking him down in the second round and basically just beating him from pillar to post. But what I saw that was interesting while the fight was going on is the order of the fighter that was supposed to win. Well, to start off, the promoter of the event, some young kid here in Tijuana who's trying to make his mark in the sport, but actually he's also the trainer of the fighter. So you have the trainer slash promoter, and he calls over this little kid to come over, maybe 8, 9 years old, to come over to his corner, which I found pretty interesting. But being that it's the Tijuana Boxing Commission, you know, there's no supervisor keeping an eye on what's going on or whatever. So I see them have a conversation. Then, you know, I'm thinking that they probably forgot some ice or they forgot some water and they're going to send the kid to go get it. Well, no, the kid actually goes to the opposite corner and says something to the opposite trainer. The trainer looks at him and says, no, no, no. And then, you know, the fight goes on. In the third round, the kid goes back to the corner of the opposite trainer, says something else to him. The trainer again says, no, no. So the fight ends, and while the trainer celebrating the one that actually won, because the fighter that was supposed to win was knocked down and cut over both eyes and everything, while they were celebrating, the trainer, the other co-trainer, and the father of the fighter that won comes right over and clocks the trainer with a 1-2 punch and just drops him to the canvas. The guy's head bounces off the canvas. He was out. The doctor had to go in there and you know, help him get back to his senses. Once he got back to his senses, I went up to the trainer that was clocked, that was knocked out, and I asked him, what did that little boy come and tell you those couple times in the ring? And he said, he asked me to throw the fight, you know? So I got together with the Tijuana Commission and asked them what's going to happen, you know, to these people that were working this corner. We said, well, the guy that threw the punches, he's going to be banned for life. He's not going to be able to work a corner in this town or any other town in Mexico. We're going to pass it on to what is basically the Associated Boxing Commissions in Mexico. And I said, what about the promoter? Well, what about him? Well, he's the guy that told the kid to go tell the trainer to throw the fight. And then the commission were kind of gave me a look like, you know, there's probably nothing that we could do about that because obviously there was no proof or anything. I mean, I saw it with my eyes. I asked the trainer what the kid told them. But, you know, that's boxing. That's boxing in certain places where you don't have enough staff or you don't have the integrity to, you know, have the regulators there to now allow something like this to go on.
That's, wow. What, I mean, what do you say about that? You know, I mean, if you're brave enough to even have a little kid go up to the guy and tell them, hey, throw the fight. And the commissioners, I mean, that's what it comes down to. The commissioners and the guys are supposed to do something about it. And where does the fear come from? Why should you even worry about what's going to come your way if you do something wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, anytime. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Lenny.
No, I feel like anytime there's a controversial decision in a big fight that a lot of people are watching, that's the first thing people jump to. People are always like, oh man, boxing sticks, or that fight was sticks. And the thing that a lot of people don't realize is when you get into the bigger fights and the televised fights, especially in Vegas and California and the United States in general, less so like in places in Mexico or in like less regulated countries, there's a lot of moving parts. So in order for something like that to get fixed, a lot of people, you have to be hiding it from a lot of people. It's a lot harder the bigger an event gets to put in the fix. But I mean, the fact of the matter is it happens in the sport because there's so many different levels of the sport. And on the lower end where it's the guy's third fight, his fourth fight, his fifth fight, and there's money behind them to make this kid a big deal. Guys are going to pull strings. Guys are going to make things happen that are shady as shit. And that's the ugly nature of the sport.
I don't know necessarily it's going to be more people you have to convince to fix a fight. I mean, if you have a trainer and a fighter that by any means that's their only way of income, I think it's a far more easier move to make because they know, and especially fighters, and you know this, Felipe, as well, that they got to feed their family. So if they're told, hey, listen, if you don't take the fall for this fight here, we're not going to guarantee you'll get in another purse on the next fight. You may be shelved for an X amount of time. And fighters, they can't make a living being shelved because most fighters, they don't know anything, and they don't know anything outside of the ring to make an income.
Well, forget about the next fight. That fight, they might not get paid for that fight that they didn't throw, you know? And being in Mexico and reporting a lot of the fights from Mexico, I've heard the stories. And with somewhat names that you guys would recognize, but I can't say who it is because I don't have the proof, you know?
Right.
But I've heard the story.
Right.
But this is the first time that I've actually seen it with my own eyes, and I've actually went and asked, you know, what were they saying to you? You know, what were they saying to you? This is the first time that I've actually seen it. But the thing is, you know, the whole punching, the throwing the punches, obviously we've seen that before in boxing. I've never seen it live, but we've seen it before where they've, you know, thrown punches after the fact. And the commission, you know, I mean, they can take my word for it, but they don't. But there's a thing too; they don't have the actual proof that that's what has actually happened. I mean, I believe the trainer because I saw it with my own eyes. But the commission, they could hold their ground, stating, you know, they could hold their ground, stating, you know what? Well, we don't have proof that that's actually what happened, so we gotta give them the benefit of the doubt. But they can't all jump on boxing and say that it only happens in boxing because
it
happens in other sports. I mean, in basketball, they shave points. In baseball, we've seen it in baseball. I mean, it's been proven. There's been movies made about it and everything. But, you know, it does happen in boxing. And to piggyback the note that Lenny said, you know, in California, at least where I've seen the majority of the fights, it's very hard to put something like that together because there is a supervisor in the corner. Nobody can get near the corner. You can't say anything to the people in the corner when the supervisor is there. So to do something like that in Mexico, I mean, in California, or any other commission in the United States that actually has a supervisor in the corner, it is very difficult.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that the Ali Act is proven here, and it shows you that the protection that it provides is very flawed, and makes it very difficult for fighters to be protected or blanketed by corruption. It's something that needs to be fixed. Something needs to be corrected because the fact of the matter is, so many loopholes in that act that was written up for fighters. Hey, I want to thank both of you guys for coming on Leaving the Ring. You know, I know we ran really short, but I think there's a whole lot for us to talk about because there's so little to talk about here on the sport of boxing here on the show and stuff. But I want to thank Felipe Leon and Lenny the Fight Smith for coming on and covering for Guerrero Montoya. Until next week, guys, you guys have a good one. We'll talk some more boxing next week on Wednesday at 6 p.m. Don't forget, every Monday is the next round. And then on Tuesdays, you got In the Square Circle. On Thursdays, you got the 2-minute round. I'm sorry, I had a brain fart there. And then every other time when Lenny can get a good guess and on, it's going to be the technical draw. And then don't forget, Leaving the Ring on Wednesday nights. Fight fans, hey, thanks for tuning in. Guys, thanks for coming on the air. Remember, don't drink and drive because you guys will spill your beer.
Thanks, Dave.
Have a good night.